Regardless of which corner of the world that you call home, one thing remains the same. Cancer exists, and the impact it has on families is universal. Welcome to WonderCast, a community collaborative podcast supporting families navigating the complexities of chronic illness. WonderCast is made possible by the generous sponsorship of Texas Oncology. Texas Oncology, more victories, more breakthroughs, experts in cancer care. For this episode, I had the privilege of visiting with the brilliant Dr. Caroline Leek while she spent a three-week intensive at Wonders and Worries before returning home to the UK. In case you weren't aware, Dr. Caroline Leek is kind of a big deal. For this episode, we learn all about the impactful resources and incredible community support she is creating for families affected by cancer through her work with the Fruit Fly Collective. In our navigation of cancer, we are stronger together, especially when there is a charismatic, resourceful, empowering boss babe like Dr. Leek there to create all the tools for your cancer tool belt. This is Caroline.
Hello, Julie. Thank you very much for having me on the pod today.
We're glad to have you. Very glad to have you. Okay, so I'm going to have you share a little about who you are.
Okay, I am a mom of two children, two wonderful, fabulous teenagers, Thomas, who's 17, and Alex, who's 14, and I have a lovely husband, and we all live in London, UK. I run a boxing club for women over the age of 40, so to sort of support and help with their perimenopausal symptoms that they might be having, or if they just want to, you know, pummel something hard at the end of the day. So that's my kind of little hobby that I love doing.
Do you have a big group?
Yeah, there's about 16 that come consistently. It's been amazing because we haven't known each other before. And so we've got over the 2 years, we've got to know each other and backgrounds and why they came and how much confidence that they've gained from coming along and just doing some a skill that's quite sort of probably more in the masculine domain and quite intimidating to go into a boxing gym, but they've always liked to try it, but not sure. So they can come along and have a laugh and there's no judgment whatsoever. We have like a community center, so mm-hmm. It's quite fun. So, you know, if someone can't look after their kids, you know, they bring along, come and do their homework in the other little space. And yeah, it's fun. It's really, really fun.
That's really cool. And then professionally,
I run a charity in the UK called Fruit Fly Collective. And Fruit Fly, the name, people always ask about it because it is a bit odd. And in hindsight, I may have chosen something a little bit different. But people remember it, which is a good thing. Fruit flies are a genetic model that people use because they replicate very quickly. So if you change a gene, do something with it, you can see the impact of that change very, very quickly. I'm a scientist by background, so I think I chose it because it was quite fun. But recently someone said, oh, I love Fruit Fly Collective, the name, because it really demonstrates, you know, how people adapt and change. And I was like, yes, that's the reason why I chose it. But it's an organization where we support and empower parents to support their own children when the parent has cancer. All I wanted to do is to sort of initially help children understand what cancer is, because cancer's, you know, obviously a very complex disease. So I thought with the sort of expertise that I had in education and sort of public engagement and making that creative and age appropriate, then I could do that. So that's where I started from. And I was very lucky to have a big group around me that I could connect with and engage with who were in the oncology field, in the psychological support field. And so together we kind of created, and I had quite a lot, a gang of artists. I found that was a really important component, because you need to create, if you're creating products, you need to create something that's engaging for the child as well as the parent. It makes stuff not feel frightening and easy to digest and absorb and retain and all of that. So that's where we started. So we did some mad projects, but then in about 2016, we started making these toolkits. So they were designed for families to take home and to work within the family and not have anyone, any outside or need any outside intervention. Some families do, obviously. But the idea, there was just tools to support education around what cancer is and what it isn't and the treatment and side effects, how life, family life will change. And then we added more coping strategy tools, tools to help emotional well-being for the child and really, you know, the parent as well. And then some practical tools as well to sort of help with family life changes. And so we did those two kits, and they are for different ages. They're called the Cancer Cloud Kits, and there's three different ones for different ages. And they're very much designed, as I say, for the family to take home, but they've been used in multiple different ways. And we won some awards for them, which really helped us because they were vigorously reviewed by the British Medical Association. So that really helped us kind of promote the products and promote who we were. And then off the back of that, we were able to do a big research study in one of the large London hospitals where we could really, like, we recruited families, we recruited staff, and we could really understand the impact of these toolkits. And then from the back of that, the nurses in particular were like, can you create something that when a parent has incurable cancer? I mean, similar tools, you know, about communication, connection, coping, but with a slight difference in maybe some of the things, maybe a bit more sort of legacy and memory collecting kind of tools involved. So we did the Pip kit. So the Pip is a lovely little monster and it's designed for a sort of child between 5 and 10 years old, really. And then there's always information for that grown up there. And then we translated that onto an online platform. So that's completely free. And really, we did that because a lot of families were worried about engaging with a toolkit that talked about grief or loss. So many of the tools they would have really benefited from and the kids would have done, but they were a bit concerned about that. So the online platform allows a parent to navigate at their own pace, and all the stuff about loss and grief are sort of squirreled away. Oh, and we've recently launched one called the Family Gene Kit. Supports when a parent has an inherited cancer. And then the last piece, for the year and a half, we've been working with an amazing team of parents who have lived experience, a real diverse group. So they have diversity in their family dynamics, as well as diversity in their cancer type and experience. And together we've created the Parenting with Cancer Coaching Program, which is an 8-week program where it's online. Each session is an hour and a half, and we follow a sort of a program that looks at different parenting techniques and tools, but through the lens of having cancer.
I love how evolving this has been. Like, it's been not just one tool. As the need arise, or as your medical professionals came back and said, this is what we're seeing, that really makes it feel very collaborative and very community focused, because it's not just one system. It's a system that is constantly being reevaluated with research and data and experiential feedback from families and staff. Those are the type of tools I feel like we need, right? The ones that are continuously being reevaluated and assessed on what is still needed to help this family cope, because we know how cancer can change and evolve, how staging makes a difference sometimes, or a child's exposure to cancer, or whether or not it is recurrent or not recurrent. I think there's just so many different variants that the more opportunities you have to have systems that can be adaptable to that need, the better. You're getting all components of wellness. So you're getting the virtual, the in-person, the things that tangible items you can take home. I love the entire concept.
So we're really lucky to be able to collaborate with groups that are in those communities and see whether what their needs are and how we can adapt and modify what we currently have.
It's comforting that you and I live in very different parts of the world, but we are both impacted. The people we work with are impacted by cancer just the same or similarly. And it's nice to see that there are these organizations that are really working to take the stigma off of not talking about things and making it to where it's accessible and something that's just common conversation in households. I did do a little research and go listening to your TED Talk. Oh. And I'm going to be linking it so that our listeners can go listen as well. But I think that there's a lot of key information that whether or not you are talking about it or the doctors or teachers are talking about cancer, your children have exposure to it and have their own ideas on what that looks like.
Yeah, when we did the cancer education in primary school, which is your elementary school, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's correct.
They're about 9 to 11. we just went into school because we knew statistically out of the 1,000 children that we taught, many of them were going to be impacted either with parental cancer or even more in the wider family community. And what we learned there was like, yes, of course, they absorb so much information. And we asked the teachers, we went in to train the teachers before we went into the schools and did the workshops, and we asked the teachers to get their classes to, on these big posters, to write down what they knew about cancer, what they worried about cancer, and what they thought cancer was caused by. The information we gained from those posters was quite stunning and frightening, because you're like, oh. So at the time, there was 1 week where in the news in the UK, I don't know whether it was over here, but black toast, burnt roast potatoes, something that we eat a lot in the UK, that causes cancer. Children absorbed it from whatever kind of sources that they had. And so that week in particular on those posters was all about black toast. It was all about burnt toast. So yes, thinking that children don't absorb anything. Well, it's very naive of us adults. And I understand it's easier to just ignore it and to not engage, but they have a lot of misconceptions that we need to talk about, because they can continue to think have these misconceptions.
Absolutely. One of the things that I would love for you to share is kind of what drew you into this passion of working with kids working with adults and parents who have children while they're going through their own treatments. What kind of led you to this calling?
A complete personal experience, really. So my dad died of cancer when I was 12 after a really short illness. And it was the 80s, so like definitely you didn't talk to children about anything, feelings or emotions or anything like that. And just not understanding what cancer was, I just knew that cancer was a bad thing, but I had no idea. And I really, to this day, I still don't know what he died of, what type of cancer. It was a very vague. We did not talk about it as a family. And then we stopped talking about dad always. Soon after. And then my mum and I have two sisters who are older, so they had moved away. And my mum and I moved to a different part of the UK. So that allowed me to have a new narrative, a new story. Didn't have to go there. And then obviously when I had my own children, the grief started to come out, and it was really odd and scary and frightening, because I thought, what's happening to me? I've had, I think, a quite fulfilling, fun life. Nothing's particularly has been damaging or anything. I had a really fulfilling life in personally and professionally. And then suddenly these cracks started to appear. And I was like, what was going on? And it took me just researching, really. And I thought, oh, I am classic textbook. You have to get the grief out. Oh, and all my teenage risky behaviors, you could go, oh, perhaps that was it. Yes. So basically, I wanted to do something that was going to support children who potentially would be impacted like I was. Having those tools, I think, would have helped massively. And also the PIP kit in particular. So that's for parents with incurable cancer or in palliative care. Because I still don't really know much about my dad. I can ask my sisters, they know a bit more, but I don't know much about anything about him. And so actually one of the PIP kits and the tools in there, and we've also done a book as well. And the book allows children to collect memories from their parents before their parents die. So they have that. They have that legacy. They have that book about their parent. You know, just silly things like, I don't know, you know, were they naughty at school, or, you know, what was their favorite food when they were kids, or how did the parents meet? You know, those kind of things. And I can't really ask my mum, because we've never had that relationship. We've never had that time or relationship where we talk about dad. I've been thinking about maybe doing a school project, pretending to do a school project.
Yeah, that's a smart idea. You're like, we're doing some research for school. I think grandparents are a lot more adapting when they feel like it's for their grandchildren when it's their own. I think that my parents would do a lot more comfortably for their grandkids than they would for me. Yeah, you're right. And you know, I think that you touch on an important thing about this concept of showing our protection and love, and how that's different than empowering. And I think that you can speak a lot to that. So if you want to share kind of for our listeners that are parents, kind of how you view the difference between loving and protecting, but then empowering.
In my personal experience, that I had the knowledge that dad was dying at that time, or just how ill he was, how serious he was. how seriously ill he was, because I would have been able to say goodbye for one thing, or been able to go in and have the agency to go in and what into the hospice or hospital and ask questions, or I don't know, or maybe just sit with him or whatever. But that was taken away from me. And I understand why my mum did it, because it was frightening, and it was probably, you know, every parent wants to protect their child, and her way of doing that was to not make me be involved, I suppose. But actually, I ended up having quite a lot of guilt for a long time, really. And my denial coping mechanism for good old, you know, 20 years or whatever, pushed that away. But actually, I do remember feeling guilt that I wanted to sort of hang out with my friends. So actually giving children that information, and they don't need everything, but having that decision, especially young people, especially like tweens and teens, who can take that information and then do what they want with it. If I'd had that information and said, no, it's not for me, that was my choice, but I wasn't given that choice. I understand why, but actually in hindsight, I would encourage parents to share with their children so they can have that agency.
It's kind of that whole concept of when we know better, we do better, right? And so really now I love that we've moved to a generation where it's okay to talk about hard things. Children aren't going to pick up on the hard things. They're so intuitive to the environment around them. That's probably one of my favorite things about kids. I've had adults who I'm like, I can't really put a finger on why I feel weirdy around this person. But then my children can communicate, oh, it's because they, you know, are heavy breathers, or they, you know, or they're kind of shifty, or they don't make eye contact when they talk to you. Nuances that I would have never picked up on. Kids are just so intuitive to nuances in adults. So even if you think you're putting on your best brave face,
absolutely, they're
picking up on, you know, mom always answers the phone in the kitchen, and when this one person calls, she goes in a back bedroom, or, you know, it's just the nuances that we can't even prepare for or even plan ahead. These kids just see, and they're like little geniuses, how they can investigate and take in all of that input that we as adults are too busy juggling everything to even notice. But they're not. They have this gift of childhood to less responsibility to just soak it all up like a sponge. And I think that this is all this to say that if you are thinking that your children have no clue what's going on, then let Caroline and I be the first to tell you, like, that is not true. They know something is up. Now, the thing about it is this is where kids are truly magical. When they don't have the answers and they don't know the real things, then they're just going to fill in the content.
Absolutely.
And that's where you get the burnt toast and and these far-fetched, we've had over the years so many crazy, crazy things kids have said about why their parents had cancer. I did something wrong. I didn't make my bed. I didn't, you know, I was born early. And so that caused my mom to get cancer. And I mean, there's a million things that you're like, oh no, that's not right. Like, let's talk through that. So I love that these tools that you've given to families, I love that they, more than anything, they create connectivity and they create communication. I think that if you can find that highway to be able to have increased communication with each other, then you're on the right path. Because I feel like if we can get kids talking, then we can clear up misconceptions. We can make pathways that allow us to be on the same page. And I think it's refreshing. I feel like if you ever want to have a new perspective on the world, talk to a kid, because they have fascinating thoughts and ideas, and it's what keeps us young. It keeps our heart young because we get a little glimpse into their way of thinking about the world.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And also having tools allows parents to realize it's okay and it's all right to talk about cancer to your children. So especially if their nurses give them something that's giving them permission. Yes, those conversations you can start by yourself, and this is, you know, the best way of doing it, then it really helps them feel in control and think, oh, this is going to be all right.
And all of your work with these toolkits and connecting with families, has a family ever come back to you and said, man, I really regret saying anything?
No, never. Not at all. It's always been the complete opposite. And so it's been lovely to see the families, the parents that have been really reluctant. And we all get it why, but encouraging them to start those conversations, they always come back to say, wow, I'm so glad I did that.
That doesn't mean it's going to go wonderfully, right? Like there's still going to be bumps and hard things, and talking does sometimes open other hard conversations.
Yes.
And that's something to prepare for, and to know that, like, there have been so many times where, even as my own parenting journey, I say something and it doesn't really go the way that I had envisioned it in my head. But that is the best thing about kids, is they're so forgiving. Go back and try again. Try again in a different way or on a different day, and change the way you did it, and clear up those misconceptions. And I feel like nothing bad can happen from talking. It's when you're not talking that it continues to just build. We lose each other. We lose each other by not talking.
Yeah. And sometimes we see that the light bulb moment in parents' head when we do like sessions or whatever, when they're talking about their children and maybe a sort of something that their child's done, some behavior, and then they just go, oh, they know, don't they? So sometimes that's been quite an interesting way when they are reluctant to talk to their children. You can talk around about their children and they come to that conclusion that, oh, yeah, they just needed a chat around it to realize that, oh, they're doing this because of this and that. So that's been quite an interesting thing. So we often do that to parents who are just, you know, a bit scared and a bit frightened, and just to look at their own family and to notice things that way.
I'll never forget, we had a kiddo when I was very young in my career, and his mom had cancer, but they had it. It was a type of cancer where you don't lose your hair. You're still going through treatment, but it's not as obvious in some of the outward signs that you would know you're struggling. And the school counselor referred this family to us because at school, the child kept drawing tombstones. Only at school. Not at home. And they were second grade. And so they had the wherewithal to know, like, ooh, we're not talking about this at home, so I don't need to be doing this at home. But school, my parents not here. So he was going so far to find those little limestone rocks that are kind of chalk-based and drawing it on the blacktop at school at recess, and was just kind of making a little graveyard out there.
Wow.
I know, which is very profound and very, like, good for this kid trying an outlet too. But at the same time, the parent had no idea, and had that counselor not been like, hey, this is something we need to kind of get everyone on the same page. As soon as we started talking and this kid felt included, those kind of behaviors stopped. And not that the behavior was bad in any way, but it was, they were trying to form a communication bridge in any way that they knew how.
Yeah. We found when we were doing our cancer education in school, the teachers were so surprised at so many kids, that generally the kids that wouldn't go up to strange adults in their school just wanted to talk to us about, you know, their aunt's breast cancer or something like that. So the teachers knew it wasn't their parents, but they didn't know that many of their wider family or community had ever been impacted. But the kids just wanted to talk. They didn't particularly want support. They just literally wanted to tell us their story and their experience. And it really surprised the teachers. I think it was a good learning curve for them to realize that actually so many kids are impacted, whether it's their parent or, you know, beyond that.
Now, you live in a totally different part of the world, but I really do believe that so many of our concerns with cancer are universal. What would you say are some of the stressors that you hear most commonly from parents in your region of the world?
Well, parental guilt is huge. I mean, regardless of your health, I suppose, parental guilt stays with you forever. Yeah.
Yes. It's just like that weight you carry around. Yes.
Yeah. So parental guilt around not being the parent that you wish that you wanted to be. Feeling that your children are growing up too fast, having too much responsibility, taking away their childhood, their innocence. If the stressors we often see in some families, if they're co-parenting, one parent wants to be open with the child and the other parent is more reluctant, that can be a big stressor. Financial, we don't have I wouldn't say it's at the top. I mean, most families are struggling anyway, other than this climate, but because we have free healthcare. However, particularly single parents, parents who can no longer work because of their treatment and because of their disease, or who need extra childcare costs or whatever. But I wouldn't say that was right at the top. I think it's more about just feeling like they can't be the parent that they wish they could be, and that they're basically ruining their children's lives.
I wish that we lived in a world over here where financial stress was not high up, but I know that that's a real impactful thing with our families here for sure.
So,
I think that it's important to know that there are lots of community programming that exists. Like for you guys, what you're doing is incredible. Now, is that something that can be accessed internationally, or is that strictly for people living in your area? So if one of our listeners lives in, say, Kansas and wants to access a kit, is that something that's possible for them?
Well, at the moment, no, only because we haven't put the shipping, but we are changing that. So next in January, that will be something, because we're initially, historically, we haven't sort of gone international, but there's been more, as people find us, there's been more need. So that will be in January. But however, if you go to our website, there are so many tools that you can find in those kits that are free to download. So all educational stuff, coping strategies, little activities for parents to do, for families to do. There's loads that are free that people can download. The PIP kit, the online version of that, you don't get the fluffy monster, but there is a pattern that you can download if you.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. So you can make your own PIP. That's all free. So that's a separate website, really. But on our website, we've collated other free resources from other amazing organizations that we always signpost to. So there's a great Australian charity app that's free on both platforms called A Kid's Guide to Cancer. We always recommend that to all families and healthcare professionals. And there's some cute little animations, I think from a Canadian charity. I think it's a bunny in space or something, but it's but it's about learning about what cancer is. The black dot, I think it's called, or something.
That's amazing.
And then when it comes back, or if you're in remission, and they're really cute. So however, you know, your child or the family wants to engage in whatever different formats, there's quite a lot there. And we've put on loads of different websites and organizations that people can kind of go and explore. So we try to make it as accessible to most people. So the kits are people need to pay for individually. But in the UK, most of the time, it's hospitals, cancer charities, schools, hospices. They buy in bulk and then they can give to their parents for free. But yes, so we've tried to make sure that there is a substantial amount of stuff available. The coaching, unfortunately, has to be UK because just the grants that we've got require
for sure.
That.
And the timing, I mean, different time zones, different... It would be a little bit of a challenge for sure. It's just so incredible the work that you're doing. And I love that you got to share with us today. Is there anything else that I didn't ask or share that we can include?
Well, I mean, I'm hoping at some point Fruit Fly Collective can collaborate with Ones and Warriors and with your amazing team, because I've been learning with you guys for 3 weeks through a fellowship. So throughout that 3 weeks, we have been thinking and brainstorming how we could potentially collaborate on certain things. So I don't know, I'm excited about the future, some kind of collaboration with you guys. We have nothing in the UK like what you do. So we'd really like somehow to get Wonders and Worries in the UK because it's such a value.
Well, what I'll do is I will talk to my staff and see if they'll move me because I volunteer. I volunteer as tribute to come and live in the UK. And and be an expat and just do the work that needs to be done. I think I need a change of scene. I'll bring my family.
They won't like the weather.
Oh, I don't know. It's pretty hot in Texas. They might welcome rainy and cold. I think we'd all be okay with that. But yeah, that would be incredible. I would love that. And I love the idea of collaborating. And internet makes it so easy now to have resources to just be able to share. I think you should share that you're going to Australia soon, aren't you?
Yes. Yeah. So again, a part of this fellowship, which allows us people in the UK to go and learn from overseas the best practices and sort of bring back some learning. So we're going to visit Canteen, which is another great organization, and they do amazing resources that are free as well. So there's some great booklets, especially for young people, because that's where I sort of started from. But there's one called My Parent Has Cancer and My Parent's Cancer Can't Be Cured, and they are amazing booklets to download. Really, really fantastically written. So yeah, I get to go over to Sydney to work with them for 3 weeks as well.
That's wonderful. That's going to be so great. And we can't wait to, through you, we'll link all of these things that you've referenced so that people can check them out and see exciting tools that are being utilized around the world. Because I think the biggest takeaway from all of this is cancer is universal. It affects you regardless of where you live, what color your skin is, how old you are, how much money you make. There is cancer that very likely could impact your life or your child's life in some way. And more than anything, we're better figuring it out together than we are trying to navigate that alone.
Thank you for tuning in to our podcast today. Please subscribe and continue to check back as our content is ever evolving. For questions or specific content-related requests, please send an email to podcast@wondersandworries.org.